Hey, everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenues Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Sipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Lavin, and Thomas Henderson. How you guys doing this week?
Good, good.
I am exhausted.
Yeah, you're telling me. All right, so the craziness is over. So, well, kind of. So we'll be returning to our kind of normal format and everything here. So we'll start with promote, extend, trade. And this one is pretty interesting, I think. Also a little long. Going to be a little wordy, though, so just kind of work with me here. So this happened in 2012. And what is his name? Simon Sachs Kolberg Gotha was sworn in as the Prime Minister of Bulgaria. And on the surface, yeah, whatever, who cares? What makes this interesting is that in his youth, and he's an old man obviously at this point, you know, his youth was late 30s, early 40s. But in his youth, he reigned for a couple of years as the Tsar of the Kingdom of Bulgaria. And he's the first monarch in world history to regain political power through separate means other than, you know, coups and such. So that's pretty interesting, I thought. So it made me think of, you know, people that got second chances. So what sports figures are we going to promote, extend, trade here who got second chances and kind of ran with them?
That was going to be like, what net has partaken in your favorite coup? I was like,
well, probably more than we'd like to imagine.
Let's not have this. Is no, we're not going here.
Promote Brandon Nimmo.
Oh, boy. Oh, no.
All right, so first up is Peyton Manning, who, you know, was really good with the Colts and everything, and then kind of was reborn with the Denver Broncos. Next is Josh Hamilton, who had many troubles earlier in his career, and then was reborn in Texas, won the MVP. And last and certainly not least is R.A. Dickey, who was not that great of a pitcher, and then came to the Mets and became a really great pitcher and won Cy Young in 2012. I think Hamilton won his MVP in 2010.
Put something like that.
2009, yeah. And Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl or two. I don't know, but I know he won
when he was old. Yeah. Like, he was pretty washed at the time, ironically.
He didn't do shit in that Super Bowl.
He brought them basically to another, though, right?
He brought them like 60% of the way through that season, and then his neck kind of said,
"You're done.
Sheesh, I'm out.
We shouldn't be doing this anymore."
Yeah. Then they had Brock Osweiler down the stretch, and then Peyton came back and was arguably worse than Brock Osweiler, which tells you all you need to know about Peyton at that point.
But their defense was it was this world.
Von Miller, Chris Harris. Did they still have Aqib Talib at the time? It was good.
I think I have mine.
Go ahead.
Extend Dickey, promote Josh Hamilton, and fuck Peyton Manning.
Agreed.
Okay.
Oh, Hamilton's terrible. Get him out of here.
Really?
You don't know it? Okay, look that up.
I know the whole, I was going to talk about how he had like an inspiring story of recovering from drug problems. Did he do other terrible things?
Look that up and get back.
Indeed.
Well, how Peyton Manning also has his own.
Yeah, look that up about Peyton Manning too.
Yeah, but I know Peyton's an ass.
I was aware of Peyton Manning's, Josh this Hamilton, happened, I assumed he was a piece of shit, but.
This happened post-career for Hamilton.
I know he got caught like at. Relapsing, which is, you know, is what it is.
Oh, good. Yep. Okay.
Oh, now I'm going to have to look.
Unfortunate.
So I'm just promoting and extending Dickey and calling that one a day.
Yep.
Yes. Yep. Praise be to Dickey.
Yep. All right, Dickey, who has always seemed like a genuinely decent guy. Was an awesome story in his own right. Well, that's disappointing.
Later incidents. Personal life, later incidents. Let's see.
Literally just read the last paragraph. Not so great. I did not know this.
No bueno.
Uh-oh, felonies. That's no good.
That's the worst kind.
It is. Literally.
That four home run, I was going to go on about that incredible four homer game in Baltimore, which is like one of my favorite non-Met baseball moments, and oh well.
Well, okay.
A hearty fuck you to Josh Hamilton as well.
Yes, yes.
His autobiography was good at least. Or biography, whichever one, I forget if it was written by him or not, ghostwritten by him or not, but oh well. All right, moving on then. We'll get to the affiliate performances real quick because wasn't really that much action this week. The All-Star break and the Futures game and everything. It was an abbreviated week, and everyone just played three games on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, or in the FCL Mets case, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So Syracuse, they played the Worcester Red Sox this week. They took 2 out of 3. And they are 42-51 on the season, 8.5 games behind the division-leading Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. Binghamton Rumble Ponies, they played the Hartford Yard Goats and they lost 2 games, with the third one being postponed due to inclement weather on Saturday. And they are currently 5-15 in the second half, also 8.5 games behind the first-place team, the Portland Sea Dogs. And they are 33-56 on the season as a whole. The Brooklyn Cyclones, they played the Jersey Shore Blue Claws and they swept the series, and they are now 14-10 in the second half, which is a half game behind the Hudson Valley Renegades, and they just happen to be playing those same Hudson Valley Renegades this upcoming week, so it should be a fun series. St. Lucie Mets, they played the Jupiter Hammerheads and they lost 2 of 3 games, so now they are an even 12-12 in the second half. And 2 games behind the Palm Beach Cardinals. And like the Cyclones, St. Lucie, they're going to be playing the Palm Beach Cardinals this upcoming week. So the standings might look a little different next week, though St. Lucie already has that playoff berth from winning the first half. So honestly, it doesn't really matter if they win.
Unrelated, but props to the Palm Beach Cardinals for having a genuinely funny Twitter account. In a landscape of very mediocre, underwhelming Twitter accounts for minor league baseball, they do a good job.
I mean, I
hate to give credit to anything the Cardinals do.
When guys like Scherzer and DeGrom are doing your rehab, you know, with St. Lucie, and these poor people in Palm Beach have to play them, it's
a wonderful bit.
What can you do?
Yeah, it's really funny. It's really funny.
Last not least, the FCL Mets, they went 1-1 and then had a game suspended, so they are 18-13 on the season. All right, so with the trade deadline in like a week or so from now, the Mets being playoff contenders, the Braves breathing down their throats, a bunch of holes need to be filled. Mets are expected to be buyers in some capacity, and the first move was made a couple of days ago. And the Mets traded Colin Holdeman to the Pirates in exchange for Dan Vogelbach. And then in a separate move, they also acquired catcher Michael Perez, also from the Pirates, in exchange for cash. But that's kind of a whatever move because, you know, McCann's hurt, Nito is hurt, going to be put on the DL. And they just want to go with somebody else other than Mazeika or Nick Dinney.
And Perez has options too, so
yeah.
So we'll see him in Syracuse, I'm sure. But
I think they already did option him.
They might have, yeah.
You want to hear the sad thing? He might not even be better than fucking Patrick Mazeika. He's bad.
A better defensive player. So
I don't not by baseball, not by the metrics. He's not.
I would just by like the appearance of it.
I mean, I very good remember looking, like, he's a better blocker or something, but not a better framer. I don't know.
Yeah, his framing is horrific.
Yeah,
I didn't know this. I didn't know this. I was like, oh, yeah, this seems like a good move. Even, yeah, you got an okay backup catcher for free.
Listen, you need someone to catch.
It's still for free, so I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's cash. It doesn't matter.
Like I said, it's a who cares move, more or less. But the main one, obviously, is Holdeman for Vogelbach. So, are you guys happy, unhappy, neutral?
I don't care about Colin Holdeman. So,
I've long been fascinated by the anomaly that is Dan Vogelbach. I believe this is a beefy boy friendly podcast. So, I'm cool with giving up Holderman for Vogelbach.
I love Dan Vogelbach. He's hilarious. He's legitimately good against righties. I also don't think that Colin Holderman is a great asset or anything. But the Mets objectively do not have a ton of good relievers. Even if he's not a late inning guy, he's one of their few viable guys with options. Holderman, this is. And it also seems like they're still interested in Josh Bell, who's and based on what the rumored returns are for is going to be for him, it sounds like it's going to be next to nothing. So
yeah.
I don't totally love this, but also I don't care that much because it's Colin Holderman and Daniel Vogelbach's fun, and it's just one of those like losses on the margin things that. Mm-hmm. I feel like better teams don't do.
But I feel like this is a win on the margin. Like, I disagree with the notion that it's a loss on the margin. Mm. Like Vogelbach is replacing Dom Smith's, like, 50 WRC plus against whatever against everyone with sure. a 150 against righties. Like, that's a significant upgrade. Like, even if they use him as a pinch-hitting, like, thing, or he only plays once or twice a week against righties, he's going to add way more to the Mets overall than Colin Holderman not striking out anyone in the seventh inning. When Epler said, like, I think one of the biggest things that makes this make more sense to me is Epler was like, there's a lot of relievers out there and not a lot of bats, so we're going to get more relievers than bats pretty much. So Holderman was going to be in Syracuse anyway. So
I guess, I mean, maybe I should, really it's going to come down to kind of what Bell gets in, winds up costing, right? Like if Bell goes for a song and the Mets basically chose to, let me back up, because I don't think it makes sense to roster all three of Bell, Vogelbach, and
I think it's pretty clear they think they're going to get outbid for Bell. That's yeah. my take on it, at least.
We'll see. I mean, look, I think this is like 10% suboptimal or something. I'm not going to, just not what I would have done, but Vogelbach's fun as hell, and Thomas is right that they desperately needed a DH upgrade, so it's fine.
Yeah.
And yeah, it would suck if they're not going to do anything reliever-wise, but they clearly are, so I mean, they were going to replace Holderman anyway.
The problem there is you do need optionable guys, though, and I don't think they have anyone that's...
Is Negosic or Medina worse than Holderman? They're the same.
Yes.
They're all the same player.
I don't agree with that. I think
Medina... I mean, I think Holderman's actively bad, so that's the difference between us. Like, I don't think he's good. Mm. Like, I was not impressed by anything he did in the majors. It looked fluky, so...
Sure.
That's the difference, I think. If you don't think it's real, then easily trade that.
I'm very neutral towards this whole thing, but I'm leaning towards negative, not that they acquired Vogelbach or had to give up Holderman. I just think that this whole thing is just so unnecessary. If they had called up Blankenhorn like a month ago.
Oh, Vogelbach's way better than
yeah,
him.
Yeah, I'm like the biggest Blankenhorn fanboy, but Vogelbach's definitely better. Not that I even disagree.
Right. I'm not. I mean, obviously, everything that Blankenhorn has done is in AAA. Right now, he has 116 weighted in AAA, and that doesn't always translate into MLB numbers. Obviously, that's a given, sure. But give him at bats, give him time to play, and you see to yourself, okay, maybe this guy can hit righties.
Well, I mean, that's true. Like, I don't disagree with that, but.
And
that's a that, different fuck up,
right? Well,
I mean, the actual answer is Francisco Alvarez should be the DH, but
yeah, I was just gonna say,
but they're not doing that. So, like, the actual answer is you Michael Harris, Francisco Alvarez, and you see if he could hack it. And if he can't, then you make the Vogelbach trade.
The answer is they should have booted Dom and JD I hate to say this because I'm like the ultimate JD defender, at least among our group. They should have booted them off the roster a month ago and given Blakenhardt and Alvarez a chance, because there's a, let's be generous and say there's a 10% chance that Blakenhardt is actually good against righties, and there's a better than that chance that Alvarez is just playing good, and then suddenly you don't need to trade for a DH or whatever. So
exactly. And then you can, if you want to upgrade, you could use Holdeman as a chip for something else. Why not? Like, I'm not attached to Holdeman. He is whatever. He is what he is. But it just, it's annoying that it's like a failure of, not, I don't know. Failure is not really a, that's too strong a word, I guess. But it just, they've been getting no production out of like Escobar and JD Davis and Dom Smith, Janikowski a little bit to a degree. If a Blankenhorn or an Alvarez or whoever also gives you nothing, it's like, well, whatever. At least you have one less question going into August, going into September, when every win, you know, is a big win.
Escobar is all, honestly already a platoon bat. He's so good. He's really good against lefties still, and can't hit righties at all. Like,
I think the problem there, though, is that you kind of need him to play third.
I mean, go McNeil, get Rafael Devers or some shit, or get Xander Bogaerts and make him play third.
I mean, again, yes.
No, like they should be shooting for the stars here. Like, they have the fourth best record in baseball. Go try to win a World Series. Don't mess around, you know?
I don't know that the Red Sox are moving those guys, but also, like, can McNeil really not play third base?
It was real bad when he tried last time.
I've seen it a few times now.
I don't think, I don't know. I feel like
he just had the yips over there. He couldn't throw. Like,
right, but that the yips are usually intermittent.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they want to risk it in a pennant. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he's a good second baseman and could play left field pretty well too. Like, so why mess with it? Just try to get a third baseman from elsewhere or use Guillorme.
I mean, yeah, but the point is they should be tinkering more than they. This is a consistent complaint that we've had with the Mets over the years, that they don't tinker. They don't churn at the roster margins ever. Like, you watch the Dodgers or the Rays or the Yankees do this to a lesser degree, I guess. Certainly the Astros, they like churn the bullpen, they churn the bench, and you see what comes out of it, and sometimes you get something good. And instead, the Mets just give 400 plate appearances to a combination of Dom Smith and JD Davis.
Not optimal.
Anyway, Vogelbach is big boy fun. He's going to hit some long dingers.
All right, so you kind of mentioned it earlier, but the Mets are also supposedly involved in talks with the Nationals in a trade that would send Josh Bell and a minor league reliever to New York in exchange for supposedly a starting pitcher and an outfielder in the upper levels of the minor leagues.
Who the hell are the Nationals asking for?
Basically, the look at the starting pitcher options. They are very limited, just like outfield options, very limited. You have basically that are not completely terrible, that are not just going to be free agents, you know, next year anyways, who cares? You have Garrison Bryant, you have Jose Budo, you have Thomas Cipucci, you have Jordan Yamamoto maybe, and Josh Walker, but he's injured. So, I mean, I'm assuming it's Budo because none of those other guys really have much going for them.
If there was
maybe
an organization,
you could make a case for Yamamoto.
I don't think Yamamoto's too like new agey to be interesting to them. His fastball sucks too much. If there was
I would say Puma tweeted 2 hours ago that Cipucci has drawn interest from teams talking to Mets about trades. That's probably not true. But also,
I don't believe that for
I just want to say.
Do you believe that anyone wants Jose Buto? And then we're back to the fact that the Nationals probably have the worst minor league talent judgment of any major league franchise, and maybe they do like Jose Buto and or Thomas Cipucci.
They might. I don't know. They're
weird. It's possible.
Change up only relievers, baby.
Yeah. Well, like, and a curveball only reliever, but whatever.
Now, the outfield options, they are equally limited here. There's Khalil Lee, Nick Plummer, Jake Mangum, but he's hurt right now. Brandon McIlwain, also he's hurt. So I don't know. I
would assume Mangum feels extremely Nats.
Yeah, I know what to say. I would assume it's either Lee because he has more time left on his contract, or Mangum just because he feels like that people would want.
They do like the guys who can't, who have massive contact problems. Like, they drafted Elijah Green, they drafted Brady House, they drafted Carter Kieboom. Victor Robles fits in this camp in a slightly different way, so maybe they like Khalil Lee.
I could see them liking Lee. I could easily see them thinking Lee is like something they could fix, and then he goes and hits 210 for like 4 years in Washington while they are bad.
That would probably be an upgrade to hitting 210.
If you could, I mean, this gets back to the Vogelbach thing. If the Nationals are legitimately interested in sending you Josh Bell for Khalil Lee and Jose Buto, A, why haven't you done that already? And B, why would you bother with Vogelbach?
So my working theory, and because this has been put in articles before, is that the Nationals were kind of being assholes to the Mets.
Sure.
About, I wonder if they came back around and were like, after the Vogelbach trade, and were like, hey, how about this instead? And made a reasonable offer. And at that point, you're not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. You're going to be like, well, the roster kind of situation here is messy, but also that's a bat you don't say no to just because you traded a reliever for Daniel Vogelbach. You know what I mean? Like, you figure it out at that point. And I would rather the Mets get bats and figure it out than say, oh, we don't need Josh Bell, or no, we're going to go look for something that might not exist. And then you're screwed at the deadline, or you have to do something you don't want to do. You know what I mean?
I don't even disagree. Like, at this point, they should do it. I think they just rushed for Vogelbach too much, is my point.
I mean, Epler said they rushed because they felt like the markets for bats were going to be tough, and the markets for relievers were going to be easy.
Mm.
So if you feel that way and you don't really care about Colin Holderman or think that he's a high-end guy, you do it, you know? Not to go back to that, but... That's my working theory about this whole thing.
I mean, what's even the bench at that point, right? It's assuming Bell's the starting DH. You have whatever backup catcher. I don't care. Vogelbach, Guillorme, and who?
Jankowski, whoever.
Yeah, I feel like you could get a better, like, go get someone better than go get Robbie Grossman for free might, or whatever it is.
They might. Yeah, I can see that. Get Chad Pinder.
I guess it's not awful because you can still leverage McNeil's flexibility and leverage Guillorme's ability to play around the infield. Yeah, it's viable. It just sucks that you never get...
And what's truly the difference about it now with JD and Dom, where JD can't really play third base and Dom's first base?
I think they should be absolutely looking for something that's more flexible than JD to acquire.
No. That's not what I mean. I mean, like, if you're going to upgrade and they're better, way better hitters, and the only sacrifice is the bench flexibility is kind of the same, I'll take that.
That's fair.
And then you beef up the bullpen and call it a day. Mm-hmm. And play Guillorme a lot more than you probably want. But who cares at that point? Because the offense is better.
It's just going to suck to be in a playoff scenario and
I know, yeah.
not be able to... You're going to be squinting at the lineup. Like, how can I possibly justify getting all three of... I mean, you play Josh Bell in the outfield. The Pirates used to do that.
I mean, just get Trey Mancini and then do that.
Yeah, I mean, that might be a better option. I mean, Bell's the better bat, probably, but...
Mancini plays the outfield. He still does. He played it today. Not amazing, but...
I think I might be the biggest Khalil Lee fan here still, and I'd move him in the second for Josh Bell, with the roster problem.
Oh, yeah.
Josh Bell's, like, 2 years removed from being an all-star, and he's hitting really good this year. He's hitting like over 300, I think, still, right? So
if he's not over, he's close.
Yeah,
he is hitting 305, 385, 494. So yes, he'd be their best hitter.
If you also could another get that for another Jose Buto, then hell yeah.
Yeah. Another nice thing about Vogelbach is he's not a rental. Like, he has very cheap team control until 2024. Like, so even if he occupies a smaller role now to be a half DH next year, that's not the word.
There's also they've shown a willingness to, like, rotate guys in and out, so
yeah,
I guess I'm less concerned about the, you know, getting guys at bats. They've seemed to embrace
you, you just wish it was.
Yeah.
I need one of them to have a half grade more athleticism so I can put one of them in the corner outfield and not want to gouge my eyes out.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you. Like, it's not a great fit, but also sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Yep. Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, Cespedes wasn't a great fit if you really look at it. Like, he another corner outfielder, mm-hmm. and then they played him in center field in the World Series. It didn't work, but they had to do what they had to do.
You've swung me a little bit more. I mean, I was still in favor of it at our speculated price, and who knows if we're way the fuck off or whatever. But
Daniel Vogelbach.
Vogelbach's a lot of fun.
I'm Shireen Ghaffari.
And I'm Alex Heath. We're hosting Land of the Giants, a podcast about the biggest tech companies of our time. This season, Meta, formerly known as Facebook. It's a company in a particularly controversial and vulnerable moment. Mark Zuckerberg is placing a multi-billion dollar bet towards an imagined metaverse future. Meanwhile, the rest of us are still grappling with what he's already built.
This season, we're going to talk to the executives steering Meta's biggest decisions. And you'll hear from some of Meta's sharpest critics, its former employees.
We'll explore why Zuckerberg is taking the company in a bold direction and how Facebook's past will inform its future.
Land of the Giants, the Facebook Meta Disruption. From Recode, The Verge, and the Vox Media Podcast Network. This season is sponsored by Klaviyo.
Subscribe for free wherever you listen and get our first episode on Wednesday, July 13th.
The Iowa Lottery was out there saying on a regular basis, hey folks, check your ticket, somebody's got $16 million. And it was sort of this mystery, why hasn't anyone come forward?
I'm Phoebe Judge, host of the podcast Criminal. True stories about people who've done wrong, been wronged, or gotten caught somewhere in the middle, told by people who know them best. Like a man who successfully figured out how to negotiate with his father's kidnappers after some trial and error.
They were just like, for that price, we won't even tell you where he's buried.
And a 12-year-old who solved a family mystery.
There were three little fingerprints. And I remember in junior DA camp, I was like, oh, fingerprints. This is definitely some evidence. Then we can find whoever broke into my grandmother's house.
Discover the unexpected side of true crime.
There were no security alarms whatsoever. The file cabinets were not even locked. So that gave us enough information to plan the actual break-in.
Listen to Criminal now, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so the draft came and the draft went, and
the Mets as all things do.
Yes, as all things do. Obviously, the guys that they selected on the first night of the draft, the first couple of picks, Kevin Brada, Jet Williams, Blade Tidwell, Nick Morabito. These are high end guys. I don't want to say 100% will be, in our prospect lists and whatever else, but there's a good chance. But who are some of the day two and the day three picks? So, everything from basically round three on. Who are, some of your favorites?
For the Mets or for everyone?
Oh, no, for the Mets.
Okay.
I don't care about everyone.
This is a Mets podcast, Lucas.
All right, fine. We talk about trading for players from other teams. Yeah, right.
We talk about the Washington Nationals for 15 minutes.
Truly a depressing franchise. All three of their fans must be very disappointed.
Breaking news, Daniel Vogelbach can go first to third on a double.
That's on a double.
Even hustling.
I'm 30 seconds behind you, this. So I'm sure I'll enjoy this in a moment.
Joey Cora is going to send him on a single, and it's terrible send, and I'm going to not even care because it's going to be funny.
Can you imagine if we're going way off track here, Steve. Sorry. I think this was generally a good change to the game. I don't need to see catchers getting destroyed. Can you imagine Daniel Vogelbach running into a catcher?
I know.
Some poor schmuck behind the plate just catching the ball, and you see Daniel Vogelbach coming down the third baseline at you.
Wait. Think about it. What happens if Dan Vogelbach got into a collision at the plate with William Sastudillo?
Oh my goodness.
The space-time continuum breaks.
Yeah, no, we all die.
There's one glorious moment of baseball perfection, and then everyone dies.
Was that like how the Big Bang started, maybe?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, you're not kidding. He was hustling to go first to third there. The obvious name on day three is Jackson Lovich, who, unfortunately, they're probably not going to sign, which I think we've talked about before. But Lovich is... I think Lovich is as good as anyone they drafted in the top five or six rounds. I might even like him more than Jacob Reamer, for instance. They could somehow pull that off. That'd be a coup, and it would be one of the best value picks of the draft, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty good.
And it's worth noting that they saved a little money on Jet Williams already. They saved $300,000. So I don't know what Tidwell and Parada are going to take. They might, I mean, Parada might eat up a lot of that money, but we'll see. Stranger things have happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lovich is definitely a good pick. I think for where he was selected and everything, Jonah Tong could be a steal.
Mm-hmm.
Profiles very much like all of the prep right-handers that the Mets pick, usually like in the second round the last couple of years. Woods Richardson, Josh Wolf, Kevin Ziegler. And they took him in, what, the...
Ninth pick.
Slot value is $225,000. I mean, they have to buy him out of his commitment to North Dakota State University.
Mm-hmm.
That might be difficult because... It's produced such luminaries as Justin Fletchlock, Reed Pfeffenstein, Jeremiah Pepcorn. You've never heard of Jeremiah Pepcorn before?
That is an 80 grade name.
Yes, I just went to Baseball Ref to see who ever came from that school. And there
did
was
he play in the dead ball era? Or?
He could have if he wanted to, I would think.
A name like that.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know if they're going to have to go crazy over a slot to get him. And, you know, there's a lot to like.
Mm-hmm. Someone was very high on the guy they got out of Georgia whose name I cannot ever remember.
It's... Well, that's mine. So perfect segue.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan Ross is his name. He's like a bigger dude, like 6'5", 250. And like the reason why I like him is he would have went higher, but he had Tommy John and he missed all of last season. So... You're basically betting. You're doing the Anthony K thing and like I think they did it with somebody else. Oh, JT Ginn and all that stuff. But you're doing it in the 13th round instead of the first or the second. So you're the downside to it of his arm injury washed him is very it doesn't really who cares because it's a 13th round pick. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like if it was a second round pick and you're losing all, like, you're kind of putting a big risk out there with that. But if it's so late in the draft, who really cares? So that's why I like it. It's a nice risk at that spot.
Test out your new Tommy John rehab practices on a 13th round pick instead of Dylan Lesko at 14.
Exactly.
And dude has a crazy, from just, you know, researching who he was to write up his profile and everything, dude comes from a crazy family. So his grandfather played football with the Falcons and the Detroit Lions in the 70s.
Okay.
His uncle played with the Brewers. He was drafted in 1997. He played with the Brewers, and then he went to Japan. His other uncle played professionally for about a decade, majors, minors, and Mexico. He has a cousin who was drafted out of the University of Georgia, and he played with the Mets system. With the Capital City Bombers and Pittsfield. And then he has another cousin that he's playing with right now at Georgia. And ironically, they both hurt their arms at the same time, which is weird.
Yeah, some good athletic genes going around in that family.
Yeah. And you mentioned that he's tall. And obviously,
85, yeah.
Yeah. Another guy that I think everyone has to like and appreciate is Paul Gervais, because I don't know if he'll be very good or not, but he seems like the kind of guy that's just hard not to root for him.
Mm-hmm.
6'10 side armor, didn't really stand out in high school, just kind of got a spot at a small D3 school because the coaches needed someone to pitch. And his high school coach gave him a good recommendation, played at a bunch of JUCOs, and he just kept getting better and better. And he eventually became the closer at LSU. And I looked up last time the Mets drafted an actual, like, decorated closer from big time school. And
it was Eddie Coons.
Riley Gilliam.
Oh, yeah, literally, from Clemson, right?
Yeah, you could take two Riley Gilliams and stand them up, and you still
Riley Gilliam wasn't even 6 feet tall.
No. Two Riley Gilliams equal one Paul Gervais. Any other standouts for you guys that you like for sentimental reasons or because you just think they're going to be really good?
We should mention the 80 grade Zebulon Vermillion name, of course.
I was going to say yes.
Of course.
He's also kind of like an ode to the old Mets guards, you know, philosophy of gigantic guys who don't throw all that hard. So, yes, there's a lot to like there.
I also like Tyler Stewart from Southern Mississippi. He's like he's also a big guy, like 6'9". He's a turbo sinker dude. And it's one of those like small school producer guys who have big stuff. And those guys are interesting because you could kind of mold them a little bit more. Cause Southern Mississippi's coaching staff is probably not as good as where he's going to go. You know what I mean? Like, he's not at LSU or he's not at some place where like he's getting the best available to him. It's just that's how life works. And it's interesting to see if you could kind of take a guy with interesting stuff like hard fastball and turbo sinker stuff and turn it into something.
Yeah. Don't disagree. Another guy kind of in that vein, Dylan Tebrick from Creighton. But I don't really think he's actually really that good, just based on his stuff and everything. I don't think he's bad either, but he doesn't really see. He seems like the kind of guy at the Mets to be like, oh, you know, looking at the numbers, but you look underneath the numbers and it's just kind of, But obviously now that he's a Met, we want to see him, you know, dominate and everything. So here's the fun part now. Let's assume that every single one of the guys that the Mets drafted sign. Odds of that happening? Slim to none. It could happen. I mean, it almost happened last year. They had 19 of 20 guys, and, you know, Rocker being the only failure there.
Pretty glaring.
Right. But had that, you know, not gone horribly wrong, they would have been able to sign all 20 of 20 guys. They also did not use... that did not draft properly in those later draft picks, so that was a reason why. But anyway, though, assuming everybody signs from this draft class, what would your midseason, you know, because we are pretty much exactly at the midseason point, what would your midseason top 10 prospect list look like? Who wants to be brave and go first?
I should save my spicy takes for last. Someone else who...
Okay, I could go first. Mine's pretty ho-hum. Obviously, Alvarez and Beatty, 1-2. And Parada and Jet Williams, 3-4. I still have Ronnie, 5, just because no one else has played. And it's hard to... For me, I don't want to always put guys who haven't had a professional pitch yet or a professional game on the diamond yet over guys who have, just because it's a different ball game. So I have Viento, 6. That might switch. I'm not married to that. And then I have Alex Ramirez. Then I have Blade Tidwell, Calvin Ziegler, and Javier Atencio rounds out. Atencio is the kind of surprise, I guess, but he's been really good in let me get his numbers up. In St. Lucie, he's been in 8 games, 7 starts. He has a 2.14 ERA, struck out 44 in 33 innings. And his, like, peripheral stuff is pretty interesting, too. So that's going to be a name to look at, type of guy, and a guy to keep an eye on as he rolls up through the system. And he's a 20-year-old, so he's pretty young.
He throws a full mix.
Yes. Sinker, change That's why I like him, too. He has a lot of things that he throws already, and he throws them in games, you know? He's not just doing this. He's not overpowering younger hitters on one or two things. Like, he has a varied arsenal, which is my favorite part of his game.
And it makes it easier, too, when you're that young and you have options. If something doesn't work great, obviously, in-game, you can switch things up a bit. And just in a broader sense, when they say, listen, your slider's better than your curveball, just scrap your curveball. Yeah. You're not really, you know, limiting yourself or removing a weapon that you have.
Yeah. And even game to game, too, not even like in a full development cycle. Like, he might go out on the mound and just not have a slider feel that day. But if you're a two pitch pitcher, you're screwed. And you know what I mean? Like, you're just throwing fastballs and shitty sliders. But if you have multiple stuff that you could throw, you could kind of bank it for a day. And you see that in the majors. Like, that's why two pitch pitchers are rare, because there's a thin line for error there. But I like him. And he's a young pitcher, too, which is always nice. And they don't have a lot of those. So.
I'll go next, I guess. Very similar. Alvarez at 1, Beatty 2, Parada 3, Williams 4. Then I have Vientos at 5. I have Tidwell at 6. Ramirez 7, Mauricio 8, Consuegra 9, Brandon Sproat at 10. And it was very close between him and then Ziegler, who was technically 11, but it could be 10 and 10A in my book. I don't know. I don't want to say I'm done with Mauricio, but...
Oh, we should wait to have that talk there.
That's true. All right, Ken, who do you got?
So I went with Alvarez, Batty, Parada, Williams, Alex Ramirez, Mauricio, Vientos, Tidwell, Ziegler, and then Matt Allen. You know, I did a dream, so...
Yeah, we still haven't heard anything about how that rehab's going.
Yep.
Yeah, that's how you can infer how it's going.
Yeah. I don't expect him to pitch at all.
If it was going well, Tacoma would be telling us.
Yep.
Sad.
But yeah, I don't want to kill Mauricio yet. But Ramirez has made strides, I guess.
Yes. Steve, I like the Consuegra call there. That's a fun one.
Yeah, I went to see Cyclones over the weekend, two of the three games. Ramirez is insane. And Consuegra, I like just looking at the StatCast numbers from St. Lucie. Like, the guy hits the ball really hard. Like, really, really, really hard.
He hits the ball harder than Ramirez does.
Yes, he does. Very, very, a lot harder. And, you know, he plays a decent enough outfield. Obviously, Ramirez gets center field because he's just the better player. But I was talking to Jared, and I was just like, I don't think that the difference between the two is really that big. And he was like,
funny. I had literally the same conversation with Jared.
Oh, okay, yeah. Like, I was, because, and, you know, they're batting, I forget who, like, Matt Rudick is batting in between them for some reason. I don't know why. but yeah, you got to give Rudick his at bats. But yeah, like, it's, he is, a, you know, he's like a year older, just turned 22, or he's 21 turning 22, whatever.
Yeah, something like that.
It's not that old for the level. I mean, we need to take into account that things kind of got weird with St. Lucie and Brooklyn with the elimination of all, you know, with the elimination of the Appalachian League and the New York Penn League and everything. So, I mean, he's age appropriate, and he missed, you know, so much time. Like, he's been around forever, but he's missed so much time that developmentally, like, he's still, I think, behind his peers, so he does have room to, you know, continue getting better. And
I kind of had prospect fatigue with him almost.
Like, yeah, no, I did too.
Like, I was almost like, oh, he's still around, and then he's been good, and I was like, well, wait, maybe I should just not do that anymore. Like, I had to almost force myself to get over it, because he's only 21. Like,
Mm-hmm.
He's not like 28-year-old Stanley Consuegra trying to hack it and single it. You know what I mean? Like, for real, though. Like, he's a kid still, so.
All right, Lucas. Let's get some spiciness.
All right, here we go. I will admit, a couple of the decisions I made here were purely for spice, but I do sincerely believe most of this. Alvarez Beatty, no arguments there. Williams, then Parada. If the data on Williams is as good as it is rumored to be, I think he would have been a consent. I think he's basically Jackson Holliday, minus the shortstop defense, and Jackson Holliday just went first overall. I do not care that he is short, really, given the purported exit velocities he's posting. He hits the ball super hard. Love the athleticism. There's the tools there to be a plus center fielder in the future. And yeah, Parada's bat is great, but I think that the like 90th percentile outcome on Williams is higher, and I'll take that swing. This one is slightly in the name of spice, but I do genuinely prefer Williams to Parada very slightly.
It's reasonable and defensible.
Mm-hmm. Fifth, I have Ramirez. Sixth, I have Consuegra. And speaking frankly, if I trusted that Consuegra would stay healthy for more than 2 months, I might put him above Ramirez. I think Ramirez makes some questionable swing decisions. I think those are exacerbated by the weird hand load he has, though it's gotten better. And the exit velocity and batted ball distribution he has is not great. It's not horrible. And his decision issues aren't Ronnie Mauricio level bad, but those are some red flags, and I think Consuegra does a lot of those things better. Hits the ball harder. I mean the strikeout rates won't tell you this, but I think he makes generally better decisions. It's just I don't know how much you can trust him to stay healthy given the track record. So that's six. Seven, Tidwell, eight, Vientos, nine, Ziegler, 10, Sproat, and no Ronnie Mauricio.
Is he 11?
I didn't think about it further. He might not be. I think he's... Were I a hypothetical Major League GM, I think he's worthless. I do not think he will ever hit at all. I don't care what other skills he has. His on-base percentage is .280.
In double A.
In double A. That's not viable.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't disagree. Obviously, it's mid-season right now, so he could go on an absolute tear and change things, and that would be good.
He also might not even be in the organization in 2 weeks.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot could change, yeah, in the next couple of weeks. It's going to be a very fluid situation on this podcast, but...
I also really like Sproat, and I know you had him 10th as well. The consistency is an issue, but when he's and you could say this about any number of pitchers, when his shit is on, it's real good.
Yeah, it's like you can't teach velocity. I mean, you can to a degree, but that kind of velocity that he has.
The slider, I think, is real good too when he's commanding it. Now, can he consistently do that? I don't fucking know. Maybe, but if the Mets can find a way to focus it, I think you got something there.
That's why he's in the minor leagues and not in the major leagues.
Yes.
I should probably have it up in front of me here. Our lists from last year. Prospects are 22. Here we go. So we would be basically replacing in the top 10. Matthew Allen for the most part, except for Ken. JT Ginn, obviously he's traded, so duh. Khalil Lee, gone from the top 10. And I don't think anyone's going to dispute that. Nick Plummer, gone from the top 10. Again, I don't think anyone is going to dispute that.
He started so well, he's just fallen off a cliff.
Yeah. Since speaking of falling off cliffs, number 10 would have been Jalen Palmer. And
oof.
And he might not even make the list.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Like, we at the game yesterday, like, we were, he, Jared was like, has this guy had any competitive at bat over the course of the entire game and the one that I saw prior? And he really hadn't. I don't even know if he made contact.
Can anyone guess Jalen Palmer's strikeout rate in Brooklyn this year?
Probably like 35.
36.2.
46.
All right, it's 40.9.
Four. If it starts with a four, it's
4.0%. 4.0.
Unless it's 4%. Yeah.
Is it?
So I would say, like,
is it worse no than? How, oh, sorry.
No. I was gonna say, no matter how we slice it between these guys, like, there's a lot more talent in the system.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like even like Morbido and Sproat would be like around 11 and 12 ish for me. Like, those guys can sneak in. Like, if they play and do things, you know what I mean? Like,
that's some way, people really like Reimer. Already.
Yeah, like, there's some stuff I've heard on Reimer, and there's a lot more interesting names now. Even there's a few guys who've taken step forwards, like Alex Ramirez has and Consuegra has. So it's the system's in a way better place, and that's what happens when you draft a million times in the first four rounds. You know,
didn't mention Junior Tillian either.
Yeah, and I like him. I like Tillian. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
The best way to illustrate it might be that usually the way Steve usually asks us for 30 names, right? And at least for myself, I usually just start by trying to write down every name I can come up with and off the top of my head. And the last couple of years, it's been difficult even to get to like 25. I get to like,
I've been 18. Like Travis Blinken, you know what I mean? Like,
hey, we do not. I will not, I know, stand by for you. I get to like 18. I'm like, I do not care about anyone else in this system. And I sat down to do this. I got to like 35 names without really trying. Like, oh, cool. Names.
Yeah, for context, let's see. The next outside of the top 10, the next couple of names were Hayden Senger, Calvin Ziegler, Eric Orsi, Jake Mangum, Adam Oller.
Like, we're ranking relievers and stuff here in the 10.
Backup like, catchers and relievers. So
Senger's been awful.
Yeah, we're credit, but those at the time, that was where they were supposed to be. Like, yeah. That's an upgrade, you know.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, the talent infusion that the system got from this draft, assuming that majority, basically assuming that everyone signs except for, like, you know, the Jayhawks and the Lovitch's.
I might have put Lovitch at 10 if they signed him. No, I don't think he's actually better than Sproat, but it would be more, he's more fun, I think. Like,
it's, for me, it's harder to rank, like, prep.
Oh,
hitters, then I mean, at least a prep pitcher, like, okay, if a dude throws 95, it doesn't matter where he's throwing that 95. Yeah. A hitter, there's just so much that it's really hard, unless they're like a really high tier, like a Williams. He is a very high tier level guy, you know.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is a little hard. He has contact stuff against high schoolers in Texas. Like, Parada played way better competition. That's the only reason why I put Parada over him. But, like, that stuff is still a little different. Like, of course, you want him to have contact rates like that, because that's a really good thing, and it probably will translate a little bit. But there's always a little bit of a, you never know with a prep guy. They're just so young.
Yeah, yeah. But the system is in much better shape, assuming that now it doesn't get gutted for all kinds of trades.
The only thing out there that's going to gut it is Soto.
Yeah, I think everything else they do trade-wise is going to be, okay, trading that guy is fine.
Right, there's nothing, no one else that's purportedly available that's going to cost a top five prospect in this system, I don't think.
Well, here's hoping. All right, so if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Sipa. Lucas is at elvalajos343. Ken is at ken1191. And Thomas is at sadmetseason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you got your podcast from. rate and review it. And of course, we thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.